אני שייך, הלב נמשך, אני בוכה להישאר, הכל כדאי, אני חי בארץ ישראל. This is my home, this is the place to be, מרגיש את אלוקיי כאן בקרבי, אז תעלה אחי ושב איתי. This is my home, זה המקום.
You're listening to the Bring Them Home Aliyah podcast, hosted by Josh Wander.
Welcome back to Bring Them Home. This is Josh Wander from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. Today it's a Erev Parshat Lech Lecha, which to me is what they call semi-sweet. On one hand, this is the anniversary of when we started this project called Bring Them Home 2 years ago. On Parshat Lech Lecha, in order to encourage Jews to come home. On the other hand, I'm not sure that we have been very successful. In fact, I would say that we have been a complete failure in our strive to bring back and to educate. Maybe to educate. Maybe we're working on educating. Maybe we've succeeded somewhat in educating, but definitely in the practical bringing back, day to day bringing back the Jews, they have come back, but only in a trickle. And we're still working very hard on this side of the ocean to try to convince our Jewish brethren to come back home. We are here again with Rav Nachman Kahana, and we are so fortunate to be here, and we would love to hear what he has to say.
Erev Tov, Josh, everybody, listeners, shalom. You spoke about Aliyah, right? That's the subject that we're dealing with. That must be the most important thing on the Jewish agenda. Every generation has, we have to keep all the mitzvot, but every generation has a particular mitzvah which leads the rest, and that gives the tone to that generation. There's no question that the major mitzvah in our time is to bring the Jewish people back from the galut, back from the exile, bring them back to Eretz Israel. The Jews, 2,000 years, didn't want to leave. Hashem has to throw them out. Say the Jews don't want to leave the Galut. Hashem has to throw them out from the Galut in order to come here. Yesterday I gave a shir on Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, written by King Solomon. The story of Shir HaShirim, the 8 chapters of Shir HaShirim, deal with the Dod, the husband, the man looking for his wife, the Raya. Raya is the wife. And it's a story of searching and frustration. He's looking for her. She's looking for him. She's looking for him. He's looking for her. They don't find each other. And now really what they call it, the symbolism is the Dod, the uncle, the beloved man, Sash Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the Raya, the wife, is Am Yisrael. Hashem searching for Am Yisrael, and yet we run away. We search for Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he says to Panim, and he is doesn't show himself. There's one particular scene in the 5th chapter, a very, very interesting scene, that the Raya is in her bed. She already retired for the night, washed in her pajamas, and she's in night clothing. There's a knock on the door. And she can tell by the beautiful perfume. Who was it? Her beloved. He found her. And she's knocking on the door and he says, open up the door. The dew is coming down on my hair. It's raining outside. And she says, I just washed. How can I get out of bed? I just cleaned my clothing. How can I soil them? I cleaned my feet. How can I dirty the feet on the ground? And she so wants, but she's unable to get out of bed. Finally, she gets out of bed and she makes it to the door. By that time interval, her beloved husband had gone away, run away. I was thinking, 2,000 years, we're looking to come back to Eretz Israel. Finally, we come here. And people say, how can I come? I just washed my car. How can I do it? I just cut the grass and the lawn. How can I leave? I just started my business. My kids just started elementary school or high school. How can I pick myself up? And when time comes to pick yourself up, it's going to be closed and you won't be able to come. I said it before and it happened. There's a period of time that even tourists can't come today. And it's going to get even worse. Hashem deals, he has a stopwatch for the Jewish people and for the world. And things, there are windows of opportunity that we live from one to another. And windows open and windows close. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say about Aliyah. I'm ready to, so many years talking about Aliyah and writing, because that's the most essential thing. Essential thing is Jewish lives. Jewish lives are even more than mitzvot, because we delay, we push off a mitzvah of Shabbat, which is the ultimate sin. It's chayav karet. When there's a pikuach nefesh, there's a question of a danger to life, and even a safek pikuach nefesh, there's a doubt there might even be a pikuach nefesh. We discard the Shabbat and Yom Kippur and everything else. Nothing more important than a Jewish life. And he has to live the years that Hashem gives him. And that's what Aliyah is about. Making people Shomer Torah Mitzvot, that's for next generation. This generation is bring the Jewish people home in any way that they came, that they come in. Doesn't matter how they look, bring Jewish people home. Anyway, I wrote something this week. If you want, I'll read it to you.
Please, we'd love to hear it.
Lech Lecha. A student at Hebrew University was noticeably affected while reading the Bible. When his professor asked what so aroused his enthusiasm, the young man replied, it was a story of the parting of the Red Sea. The professor was not a Torah observant person and told the young student, calm down, because according to scientists, the Red Sea at the time was at most 10 centimeters deep. A few minutes later, the young student became even more enthusiastic as he read further. And again, the professor asked the young man, why are you so enthusiastic? The student replied, what a great Hashem we have. He was able to drown the entire Egyptian army in only 10 centimeters of water. I can understand that as a man of reason, the professor would see some of the episodes related in the Torah as outlandishly fantastic. I am sure that the professor was scratching his forehead when he read Parsha Lech Lecha, where Avram and his 318 students, soldiers, vanquished the allied forces of four major kings with their hardy trained and battle-hardened troops. But the dilemma regarding this battle begins long before the final victory. There was a military alliance of four powerful kings. King Amraphel of Shinar, King Arioch of Alasar, King Kadaloma of Elam, and King Tidal of Goyim, identified as the head of an alliance of many smaller states. Okay. The entire region was under threat of conquest. The whole Middle East, you know, North Africa, maybe Europe, because after their stunning victory in Eretz Israel over the five kings, it would be logical to assume that the four kings were on their way to further expansionist conquests after defeating the five kings of the Jordan Valley, but nothing succeeds more than success. On this background, it would be safe to assume that the nations of the region, Egypt, countries in North Africa, Asia Minor, were sharpening their spears in preparation for defending their own countries. But nothing of the sort is recorded in the Torah, quite the opposite. The only force that gathered to make battle with the four kings was Avram and his 318 student soldiers. A highly respected and learned professor would be justified in casting doubt on the reliability of the biblical account of Avram's battle against these four powerful kings, except for one undeniable fact. A similar scenario is happening today in front of our very own eyes. The civilized world is being threatened by the enemies of humanity and freedom, by the Islamic fascist state of Iran. The mad leaders of Iran belong to the Shiite Islam sect that believes that the last Imam, the Mashiach, who appear only on the background of a universal catastrophe. And is the mission of Iran to bring about that horrific catastrophe that's driving the Iranians to forge ahead with their nuclear program. Excuse me. On this background, one would expect the Christian nations to band together with the moderate Arab nations to preempt this threat. The United States, with its vast military capability, and United Nations with its capacity to organize an international military force, would be expected to lead the free world continuing to be free. However, the reality of Avram versus the four kings has come back to haunt the free world. The eyes of free nations are not focused on the world's military power, but rather the object of the world's expectation is none other than the isolated, besmirched, and hated state of Israel. Will we attack? When will that happen? How will we surprise the Iranians? Planes, submarines, cruise missiles, land forces. How will the Israelis do it? Why are the Christian and Sunni Muslim nations apathetic, indifferent, and passive to the Iranian threat? That's a big question. I suggest that just as in the Parsha, the pagan nations wanted Avram to go to it alone in the hope that the four kings would kill this undesired spiritual revolutionary. Contemporary Gentile nations want Israel to go it alone in the hope that Iran will destroy this nuisance Jewish state. But just as in our Parsha, Avram's 318 men, IDF, finished off the four kings, our child is aided by Hashem in a supernatural way. The iron fist of Am Yisrael is our young holy soldiers of Tzal. So when Israel will act, the world will be taken by surprise, but not us, because we know the future by learning the simple stories of the past.
Beautiful. This, a couple days ago in Daf Yomi, I heard a story which shook me up a little bit. Of a family in the United States that had all of their Aliyah plans prepared, and they were ready to come this year, and then they heard that, or they realized that this year is a Shemitah year, and they said, we're not going to come this year, this is too complex, it's too complicated to come during Shemitah, all these different halachot, how are we going to deal with them? We're going to postpone our Aliyah for a year, and so we don't have to come during Shemitah. And on our radio show, I had Rabbi Tzvi Ramon from Alon Shvut address this. But I'm thinking to myself, when I'm thinking more of this story, what are all the Jews going to do if they find Shemitah to be too complicated when they have a Beit HaMikdash and Karbanot and Tuman Tahara? And they have to deal with all these halachot, which they have no clue about. So Shemitah is pretty easy. I mean, there are different opinions, and all of them are legitimate and reliable. But when it comes to all these other things, this is like a whole new world of Judaism. How does Rav Nachman see the future playing out as far as Jews transitioning to a post Beit HaMikdash world?
I have a chavrut every day with a good friend of mine, actually a physician, and we're learning in the Rambam, the laws of the Beit HaMikdash. What a world. What a complex world. What's going to be like when the Beit HaMikdash comes? Every man has to come, or actually women too, have to come three times a year to the Beit HaMikdash. By the time you're unpacking from Pesach, you have to pack again for Shavuot. And then the laws of Tumah v'Tahara, laws of a ritual purity. There's no end to it. When the Jews received the Torah Mount Sinai, they were very surprised, because about few weeks before, they came to a place called Mara. And they left Egypt, and left the Red Sea. They came to a place of Mara. It was an oasis. And there were tamarim. There were dates, and there was water. Everyone is happy. And Hashem gave them three mitzvot. Chazal say, some say even four. Three mitzvot everyone agrees upon. Shabbat. Shabbat has a social meaning. You don't work, and every man is a king in his house. Very nice. Kibbutz Av Va'Em. Certainly. It's also a social intention over here. Children should respect the older people. Yeah. Three was laws of, let's say, of societal laws, laws of finance, the laws of damages, torts and damages. So why these also, everything is made to make society a better place. And they agreed. A few weeks later, they find themselves at the foot of Mount Sinai, and all of a sudden it comes crashing upon them. We are Hashem's chosen people. We're not here in this world. It's not going to be, it's not a rose garden. The world is a battlefield. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu trains his soldiers to be able to defend themselves in this battlefield. But what? So how can we live? The life's going to be so difficult. No. Because as Yirat Shemayim, as faith in Hashem and the fear of God grows, the more you want to be attached to Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the more you're willing to do all the things that you have to do. If your level today of Yirat Shemayim and the demands of post-based Hamikdash, and certainly you're right, it's not going to work out. But person is going to change. There's a compilation, there's a sefer called Yalkut Ruveni. The compilation of Ruven. He brought out a book of, it's a book of Midrashim, like Yalkut Shimoni and other kind of books. Like the Midrashim written by the Tanaim. And he writes over there, one of the things that he writes in Yalkut Ruveni, day is going to come when Hashem will bring the Jews from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. They're going to become rich beyond any human imagination. Where will the wealth come from? Miyama shel Yafo, from the Sea of Jaffa, which means the Mediterranean. We have now gas and oil. Who knows what else is going to be over there? And they're running right now. They have tennis courts and the homes and Porsches and everything they want. So what about the Jews in Eretz Israel? What about us? Oh, we'll also become wealthy, but we have something else. Hashem will open up the earthly Gan Eden and bring us in there and teach us the secrets of the Torah. Now, all the Jews from Chutz Laaretz who missed the boat, they came here later, said, we also want to hear the Hashem teaching these secrets. Hashem says, no. That's for my children, Eretz Yisrael. They came here. That's only for them and not for you. The first time I saw this, I got the shivers. What does it mean? You can't come in, they are Hashem teaching you? That's right, because you missed the boat. There's a timetable. And we, Bezat Hashem, we're going to look forward to hearing the Kodesh Baruch himself teach us from the word Bereshit, the last words that they called Yisrael in the Torah. Imagine. Now, at this kind of a spiritual level, it doesn't matter to you how many halachot there are. The more there are, the more you want to keep. The Tumah B'Torah becomes a joy. Korbanot becomes a joy because we're doing what Hashem wants. The person has to change, and we will change. We'll change. And that's the secret to the success.
My only question is, and we'll end with this, is it always amazes me that people think that Mashiach is going to come and it's going to be a magical experience in which the Beit HaMikdash is going to fall out of the sky and the Mashiach is going to come and is going to solve everyone's personal problems. I think we've discussed it before a little bit. And that everybody's going to automatically know a third of the Torah, which has been basically not learned for the 2,000 years of Galut. It's only been learned by a select few people. Most people that in the world today that are affiliated barely know the halachot that apply to them in Chutz Laaretz, let alone all the additional halachot that are completely foreign to them. I'm just wondering, the way that you just described it, it sounds more or less like there's going to be a magical transformation, not like the Rambam says that everything is going to be in a natural succession.
There's a Gemara Masechta Chagiga, second chapter, speaks about about one of the rabbis says, the brothers, Yosef's brothers, were in a quandary. They didn't understand what happened. We came down to Egypt, we were served for a commercial reason, to pay money and to buy food, and all of a sudden, we have this man, the assistant of the Paro, what is it called, what was his title? The viceroy. Standing over there, accusing us of being spies. How did this happen to us? And couldn't understand. How did we get into this dilemma? How did we get out from this dilemma? In 1 second, everything became clear. Yosef gets up and he says, Ani Yosef. I am Yosef. Minotaur, that's Yosef. Everything became clear to them. The rabbi says in Gemara, at one moment, all of a sudden, the world is going to hear, Ani Hashem, I am God. At that moment, everybody changes. The world changes. The human being changes. The one word, Ani Hashem, Ani Yosef. Now, we can only speculate about what can be. We barely understand what happened in the past or what's happening in this present, much less to be able to define or to say what's going to be in the future. But there is a future, and the future belongs to Am Yisrael. You have a space of who knows how many more years. There's a machloket in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. See, there's the Mashiach, and then there's the advent of the Mashiach. Advent could be 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, who knows how much. Then there's the Mashiach. One rabbi says, Yete v'lo achmine. Let him come, but I don't want to see him. Another rabbi says, Yete, let him come, v'achmine, and I want to see him. This is not a halacha question, as does something very, very personal to the individual. You're willing to suffer, or you're not willing to suffer. And it seems that what's the way the world is going now, and put it this way, Migdal Bavel in this week's parsha, what happened? Everybody spoke the same language, and it brought the world to a crisis point, and Hashem was forced to divide people, take them away. What happened now is a situation where everyone is speaking the same language, the language of Corona, the whole world. And we're all in the same, and we don't know why Hashem is doing it, where is it taking us, but we're in His hands. And I can only say that when in Eretz Israel, there's a feeling of freedom that you have, you walk on the street, because deep down, you know in the hands of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You don't look over your shoulder, who's walking behind you. Here we look straight ahead. Okay.
Bavel, of course, is another way of referring to the Jews that are in outside of Eretz Israel. And it also comes from the word bilbul, how there's a great confusion. And indeed, today we're living in a generation where there is a great confusion. And we hope that our words enter the hearts of our brothers and sisters around the world, and they understand that this is indeed the time to come home while they can. And we thank you again for being with us today, Rav Nachman.
Shalom, shalom.
Thank you for listening to the Bring Them Home Aliyah podcast. If you identify with our message, please subscribe and tell your friends about us too. You can leave us a review on iTunes, as that really helps us grow. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. For sponsorship opportunities and for all other inquiries, please email us at bringthemhomeisrael@gmail.com. Check out our website at www.israeltorah.org for more content on this vital topic. This is the place to be.